10th, 2015. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us, and hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information in this world. For me, I go and sit at the feet of the people who know. I went to go see John Cleese on Friday.
I heard about this event.
This was amazing. I'm still beaming from this. I get to see a lot of famous people. I get to see a lot of my idols. I've been in the room with the Dalai Lama. I've been in the room with John Cleese, Carol Spinney, who we'll talk about in a moment. And these men, these people are so influential on me. I've been shaped by their work, and sitting at the feet of John Cleese and listening to him talk for an hour and a half was amazing.
Tell me a little bit about what he was talking about.
He is a writer.
Yes.
We've talked many times about how writers can use words and get across points so much better than so many other types of people. Even doctors sometimes have a trouble getting that intelligence out of their head.
Writers have a way with words.
Writers have that way with words, and we love talking to writers. When we talked with Trace Ballou a few weeks ago, That was amazing because he's a writer. He knows how to form thoughts.
And organize those thoughts.
John Cleese had so many great ideas about what he thinks from his perspective as a 70-year-old man going through life as he has, how we should be doing things, and he puts it into such a fun spin. Yeah, he complains about politics because because politics is very easy to make fun of, especially in our current Republican debates. He talks about the Republican debates as being the funniest thing on TV right now, and a lot of people agree with him. But he has this idealistic world in his head where people are people and we can live together and we don't all have to walk up to him and tell him how wonderful Monty Python was.
Well, I think that's the ultimate society, is one where you can live your life. That's a great way of describing the ability of people to live together who have different views on things.
It is Veterans Day tomorrow, so
yay!
Thank a veteran for all of the things that they've done for us to make our society the way we want.
Is this a part? This is on Facebook. It'll be, everyone confuses Veterans Day with Memorial Day. Memorial Day is where we honor the dead.
Yeah, don't thank them.
Yeah, this is the day that we thank the living.
The living. the people who served and made our country the way it is through all of their sacrifice, and we appreciate all of them. Especially tomorrow on Veterans Day. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And Chip, you finally got to see I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story.
Sure. My mother was in town, so we started getting the movies we were going to watch.
You got your jammies on, and
oh, yes.
Captain Crunch, and sat in front of the TV and watched Big Bird.
Yep.
All right.
Milk and cookies. It was awesome. And my mother and I watched the Carol Spinney story. And Carol Spinney is a very, very cool guy. And the first thing I thought about the entire time you're watching this movie, first of all, it's very hard to turn away. He's a very heartwarming person.
Yes.
And a person who is very at ease, very, very comfortable with who he is. Carol Spinney can teach all of us a lot, not about being Big Bird, but about how to live your life. He was very into being a puppeteer. He really designed, he talks about his designing Big Bird and Oscar character. But I think the most important thing I learned from it was he was where Jim Henson and Frank Oz would stay and work and work and work and work. He was very apt to say, yeah, I've done my work. I'm going home. I'm going to spend some time with my wife. We're going to do something we value. We're going to go swimming or go for a hike or whatever he's going to do, painting or something of that nature. Spend time with his children. He was very comfortable with doing things and using his puppeteering, something he truly, truly enjoyed, to do other things that he really, really valued, which I think a lot of people miss out on. That he just has that right balance of work and enjoyment.
Oh, yeah. That's what it comes down to, is that balance. You have to be at work. You have to do your work. But if your work is your life, then what do you have at the end when your work is over?
Well, I don't think that Jim Henson was wrong, because Jim Henson, you know, went from Sesame Street, and he's working on the Muppet show, and he's working on Fraggle Rock. I mean, he just seemed to be always, always busy. And Carol Spinney was busy, too. But Carol Spinney also talked about how Jim Henson would come to his house. And while he was officially his boss, he became a good friend. But I think what Jim Henson, why he would go to Carol Spinney's home and spend time with Carol and his wife, was because he knew Carol was comfortable outside of his work. So that Jim Henson really understood the strength of Carol's life and the ability to take time off to, you know, recharge the way you want to. Carol was very creative during his off times. There's plenty of home movies in this film, and the fact that the entire film is interviews in his home movies. He talks about his visit to China. There's a very touching story about the little girl who starred with him on Follow That Bird. I think that was the name of the movie. The Chinese girl. And how the Chinese government basically just immediately divided them off. They all left China in tears because they really grew close to each other. And the ending of the movie is they reunite with this girl. And she's a woman now. And the tears that are flowing. I mean, it just truly is a very touching film. Carol Spinney, in my opinion, is certainly not as touching as Mr. Rogers. But Carol Spinney is right there. I mean, you just, when he talks, you just want to listen.
Oh, absolutely. When I got to spend time with him, I was so happy, so nostalgic for that childhood where Big Bird was a huge part of my childhood growing up with PBS. I watched a lot of Sesame Street. Okay. I still do. But he is the embodiment of that joy of that character. He created that character, decided it was going to be a child with childlike characteristics.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. His wife is equally as interesting. They truly do. I mean, if you talked about two people who are Legos, they just fit together. We all wish our relationships were as strong as Carol and his wife's.
Yeah, I actually talked to her more than I talked to Carol, and she's a lovely woman. She told a great story. I don't know if I told this story the last time we talked about Carol Spinney, but she told a great story the night before. There was a fire alarm in the hotel, and they all had to go down the stairs because in a fire alarm, you can't use the elevator. So 81-year-old Carol Spinney is slowly getting down the stairs, and he gets downstairs outside, and all the people in the hotel are gathered around, and one man walked up to him and said, "Mr. Spinney, I have to tell you, I have seen you in my pajamas so many times. This is the first time. I never thought it would happen that I would see you in your pajamas." That's a great story.
Another point I should mention is he truly is an artist. Mm-hmm. And artists can be unique, and he is a unique person. Mm-hmm. He really did find that person who could mesh with him, and they really do push each other forward. I think that's another thing that if you are an artist or a person who has artistic dreams, he's a good person to try to emulate, because he really did have the work-life balance. There's a person I follow on Facebook that's similar to that. His name is Todd Klein. And he is he's known for lettering and things of that nature. He's an artist in his own right. But every time I read something that Todd writes, I get the same. He's very, very similar to Spinney. And look him up. Look up this. Look up letterer Todd Klein.
Very good. You also watched a totally different movie. You watched Big Eyes. This is the Margaret Keane movie directed by Tim Burton. And we know Tim Burton, he has a style that is the Tim Burton style. And this one is a little bit different, you said.
Yeah, this is very different. You can definitely tell it's a Tim Burton. Now, Tim Burton did Nightmare Before Christmas. And he did Frankenweenie and
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, Edward Scissorhands. You know him from this. And so he has a very distinctive style.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a movie that would be most like it, would probably be like Big Fish. But Big Fish is sort of this fantastical fairy story.
Mm-hmm.
This is not it. This is a true story. And while you can see his vision in there, it's much brighter than what it usually is in his movies.
Okay.
And the actor actress is Amy Adams.
One of your favorites.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. If you don't know about this this artist, who was from the late 50s, 60s, and she actually still living today, she did these kind of children with these great big eyes, these great big dark eyes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it with hopefully not to insult her. They really were kind of strange. They caught on, maybe like Trolls caught on or Pet Rocks caught on. At one time, they were selling them as her paintings, but many people couldn't afford her paintings. So what we got was prints of those, and that's what people are buying, posters and things of that nature. This is a very interesting time, though, because it took place in California, particularly San Francisco, in the 60s. San Francisco was a very hopping place during the 60s. I mean, I guess from the Grateful Dead to Vince Guaraldi and all this other stuff, you know, from the jazz age and the art age. It really was kind of a popping time. So you got a little flavor of that. You also got the real story of what she went through. She had initially had left her husband with her daughter, moved to San Francisco on her own, divorced, and then got married to what ultimately became a huckster, a person who took advantage of her, was signing his names to her paintings and selling them as if they were his. And there's a whole story involved in that, which eventually comes out where she leaves him, and then she is revealed as the artist. She has a few styles that she paints him, but she's best known for these big-eyed kids. Somebody liked them. Andy Warhol said something to the effect of, well, if people are buying them, that means that somebody likes them. It's good art.
It must be good if somebody's buying. That's a good way to look at it.
Now, with all of the movies, we have, who was the musician for? Is
Danny Elfman.
Oh, yes.
And Danny Elfman.
And he is the composer for this music, too.
So we know the genre of Danny Elfman music, too. He has a particular style.
No, this is different.
Oh.
If you've listened to maybe American Beauty's soundtrack and Lemony Snicket's soundtrack, you got a guy named Thomas Newman. And Thomas Newman has a very distinctive kind of the way the music kind of plays. Danny Elfman emulates that quite a bit in here. Interesting that I caught that. I'm sort of watching going, wow, that's interesting. I enjoyed this movie. It is a little odd. I wouldn't say that it is on the oddest part of what we usually get from this director, Tim Burton. But I would say, and by the way, Johnny Depp wasn't in this film.
Really? he's not around the corner somewhere just peeking out going, hello?
No cash yes or anything like that.
Wow.
This really was where Burton sipped out a little bit. And this was a true story, so you get a little bit of that. I enjoyed it. I think that many people will enjoy it.
All right, we'll put that on a Chip Recommends list. That's what we need to do. ChipRecommends.com.
Be careful.
Got a couple of movies that are opening this week, but it seems like a really slow week for movie openings.
Well, last week we were talking about all these different movies that were opening, mm-hmm. and yeah, the big ones and the small ones. And then we have this. This is kind of the lull before the storm.
This is the TikTok, I think. I think the Peanuts movie and the other movies that are out now are going to take up a lot of the movie dollars. So you found a few. One is called Man Up.
Man Up, baby.
Yeah, this is one of those romantic comedies. This one's written by Simon Pegg, who I love.
Simon Pegg.
Of course. That's why you write a movie, so that you can star in it.
So this is a movie you go to the theater and you're like, well, I don't want to see the Peanuts movie, and I don't want to see this. I don't want to see Spectre. And you just agree to go to this movie, and you go in, and you're going to have a good time. And this is the perfect type of movie for that.
There you go.
So it's a little romantic comedy. I think it has to deal with sort of a blind date and maybe something going on during it, and they fall in love. So there you go.
Great. The other one is called My All-American. This is a football movie, so go ahead, Chip. Tell me about football again.
Well, this was written or directed by the person who does, who did Hoosiers. He also did Rudy. So if you've watched Hoosiers, or if you've... No, that's too bad.
Nope.
These were fun films. They took place in Indiana at the time. They talked a little bit about their typically inspiring films. Hoosier's probably one of the best basketball films out there that I would recommend.
Mm.
Oh, yes, but you should watch it if you haven't seen that one.
Mm.
Rudy is much more of a fairy tale, not as true as Hoosier's was. I mean, I'm sure they take some liberties. But this is about, this My All American is about University of Texas, about a gentleman who played there called Freddie Steinmark. I was not aware of this story before I was looking into this film. Freddie was a small guy who played in Texas, didn't think he was going, I mean, wanted to play Division I football, didn't think he was big enough to play for a school like Texas. So what we end up having is a gentleman who was too small, ended up playing for University of Texas, and then had an injury during one of the final games of the year against Arkansas, which was one of the big games. It may have been one of the games of the century. And he hurt his leg. They looked at it. There was a tumor on it. They had to amputate his leg all the way up to the hip, I think.
Wow.
So I guess the story's going to end with Texas playing the Fighting Irish Notre Dame team for the national championship. Texas ends up winning it, and I'm sure there's going to be something inspiring at the end of it. But it is a story of a guy that didn't think he could make it, who went and made something that was pretty incredible. Because of this event, because of this win, there was the war against cancer started by Richard Nixon. So this obviously caught the American spirit of the time, maybe the zeitgeist of that time. This was before my time in the sense that I was a baby. I wasn't aware of things like this. But this is one of those legendary stories that if you're a University of Texas fan, that you'll be able to go and you'll be able to say, wow, that's pretty incredible. So good for us.
Good for you. Go watch football and watch a movie about football. Must be fall. Brings us to our appetizer app of the week, and you found there is a new player in the Hey Get Me Places game. We have Lyft and Uber, which are really dominating the market, and there's a new player in this called Gett, and they're operating only in New York City right now, and their big thing is you can call a car, and it's a $10 flat fee and no surge pricing.
How you like that?
I love it.
And it works just like that. The article I found, the gentleman did a side-by-side comparison to show the difference between using Gett and using Uber. The Gett person picked him up in a SUV, very nice one, which was just basically luck of the draw, I'm sure.
Sure.
And it was a little over $10, with the taxes and stuff like that. The same ride through Uber at the time was $27. So they tried to replicate the same thing.
We live in such an interesting time with all this stuff. The taxi service, all of those regulations that we've been putting onto the taxi service for 100 years, they've restricted it so much.
It's being ripped apart right now.
It's being ripped apart by these other guys.
The beauty of this is if it does work out. Now, I don't know if this is going to last forever, but the idea of flat pricing may work forever. I mean, that may be the trend that we go for. If you know it was $10 or $20, I can tell you that these types of services are rifling through, and if you're a young person, you're absolutely using them. My children were downtown Chicago with my wife. They needed to get someplace. My 14-year-old called an Uber. She goes, "No, Mom, I'll call it." They called Uber. Uber picked them up and took them where they needed to go. My wife was not aware of this. They had a code for a free ride. I think they had to pay for one of them. So what we're talking about is if you're a young person, you're used to using your smartphone, you're going to be able to get around.
There's an app for everything, including mm-hmm. getting a car to pick you up and take you places.
And if we think about the strength of Lyft and Uber right now, to be able to get your name out there, something like Gett, maybe the flat pricing and $10 is enough to go, oh, maybe I'll download this and try this out. And, you know, think of the challenges that Jet.com right now is having with Amazon. You know, I think their business model, it was maybe 10 years to get them to be up and ramped up on that level. So anyway, it's You have to be there for the long haul.
So our listeners in New York City, go to Gett, which has two T's, GETT.com, and try it out. Tell us what you think. Give us a call or an email. We'd love to hear from you. We don't use Uber very much because we live out in the suburbs, and there's not many Uber drivers.
There are no Uber drivers in our suburb, interestingly enough.
We need a side job. It'd be a great side job, especially for me in the summer as a teacher.
There was the football player that mm-hmm. was that the article was on. I can't
professional
remember.
Professional football player of some stature.
And he wanted to become a broadcaster. This was his way of talking to people. And he enjoyed it. He said, I enjoy driving my car. He had a nice car because I enjoy driving it. And I enjoy picking people up.
See, I don't enjoy driving, so I'm not sure that this is the right side job for me. But it's something.
I drive a lot around the Chicago area. I mean, it's part of my job. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that I don't like traffic.
I don't mind traffic. When I went to go see John Cleese on Friday, I left school as soon as I possibly could because I knew there was going to be a long traffic wait to get to Chicago. It didn't bother me. I use Waze, and I know that there's going to be traffic. I'm not surprised when there's traffic. It's mm-hmm. Chicago. There's going to be traffic.
I had an event. I had set up a professional event down downtown Chicago. That event was to start at 6:30. So I said, I will leave at 2 o'clock to make it down to a 6:30 meeting, thinking that I would be down there by 4:30 and it would give me 2 hours to set up. I arrived at 6:25. I mean, it was a unique circumstance. I had an 18-wheeler flip over on the other ramp, and it caused a backup. But I can never tell. I mean, it is very, very difficult to tell when driving sometimes mm-hmm. how long some things will take.
Yep. Brings us to our book of the week, and I am on a tear with the Star Wars books. This is our, third week in a row where we're going to talk about a Star Wars book.
This is the slow build-up. I think mm-hmm. that this is also going in any type of media. It doesn't matter if you're watching television, going to a news site, or if you're on any type of social media. There's something Star Wars somewhere.
Something Star Wars somewhere, and I'm avoiding a lot of it, but I am delving into some of the older things. And what I read this week was William Shakespeare's Star Wars by Ian Desher. This is a very interesting concept.
I remember when this book came out, mm-hmm. and I was reading excerpts of it. And I said, there's no way I'm going to read an entire book of this. But you went for it.
Well, you have to remember that I have a degree in English, and I am a Shakespeare scholar. I am the Shakespeare scholar for my school. So I like Shakespeare, first of all.
Okay.
And I love Star Wars. So putting those together, it's a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup ready to happen.
So did you read this in the Globe Theater?
No. But I've fallen in love with this concept. It is what you might expect it to be. It is the story of the original Star Wars movie with a bunch of thee and thou and hence thrown in for language. But that's not the part that I loved. The part that I loved is this author has given us an internal monologue for every one of our favorite characters.
There are monologues?
There are monologues. He has added these thoughts that this author thinks maybe this character was thinking in that classic movie that we all know so well,
and
including R2-D2.
Well, give me an example.
He gives R2-D2 a storyline that R2-D2 never had from any other perspective. He gives R2-D2 a puckish line where he is the one who is driving the story. R2-D2, because we don't know what he's saying, when we have his internal monologue, he is thinking all of these thoughts about how he can manage this story, how he can get these people into these situations.
So is he sort of the host for the entire play?
No, it doesn't work out as a host as such. He is a sprite. I don't know if... Do you know Puck?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He is the one behind the scenes who is manipulating the whole thing. We don't see his manipulation of the story except for in his monologues.
All right.
It's great. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoy this one. The whole time, it's presented as a script. It's presented as I might be able to present it on stage, as you might expect a Shakespeare play. And my imagination was right there. The whole time I was thinking, I could do this.
Do you think someone has performed this?
I'm not sure that anybody has, but I could see the possibility of it. Yeah, I could make this happen.
There's a summer coming up, and there seems to be a play that gets put on every summer through the school.
Shakespeare in the Park. I've been wanting to do a Shakespeare in the Park forever. And a Star Wars Shakespeare in the Park would be very interesting. I don't know if we would have the audience for it. I don't know, but
you don't know? Maybe a few people could show up?
Maybe this year might be the year.
Well, the Force could be with you on that.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars. Brings us to our Now the News. Stan Lee.
Who was that guy?
Oh, boy. Let's make a list of all the people whose autographs I have on the wall. I have the Dalai Lama. I have John Cleese. I have Stan Lee.
Tell me more, true believers.
Stan Lee is the guy who is the P.T. Barnum of Marvel. He is the guy who created some of those characters that we love from Marvel, some of the better ones, even though he may have not created some of the ones he says he created.
Well, he was the writer. He was also the person who put together. He was the voice of Marvel for many, many years. He's still
the face of Marvel.
Yeah, he still is listed as not the official editor of a book, but maybe the editor in not the editor of chief. He's Stan Lee Presents. Mm-hmm. I think it still says that. I'm not sure. But it did for many, many years, even after he left. If you listen to the cartoons or watch the cartoons maybe during the 80s, he was always the guy that did all the intros.
He's got such a distinctive New York voice, doesn't he?
He does. And he wrote this book called Amazing, Fantastic, Incredible. And it came out last week.
It's a memoir of his life. And he has done an audio version of it, and we have in the show notes a clip of that audio. I could listen to that.
Well, I could too, because he has a very fun, exciting voice.
But the memoir itself is a graphic novel.
Okay.
So it's going to be it's a very interesting mix of genres there.
Well, one of the things we also, very similar to you saw John Cleese, and to have these guys tell their stories, if you haven't heard them, they tend to have fun stories, and they're also a great example of very humble beginnings, and they built something that's lasting and loving.
There is one interesting part about that. If you have heard Stan Lee's stories, you've heard Stan Lee's story, because he tells the same story every time. Every time I've been in the room with Stan Lee, it's like, oh, yeah, yes, we've heard that story, Stan. Tell it again.
Well, in many ways also, because he created so much in such a short time, and because the Marvel way of writing a book was they would have a plot, the artist would draw it out, and then he would come back and put the jazzy conversation to it. Mm-hmm. He tends to mix up stories too.
He does.
So, you know, you have to have this loving forgiveness when you're listening to it.
Yes.
Because he really is kind of an enthusiastic, fun guy.
He is so fun. He is so fun to be in the room with, to hear him tell these stories, even if you've heard them before. It is still exciting. You know, I talk a lot about Star Wars. I'm really excited about Star Wars. A lot of people are really excited about it. One guy who is really excited about Star Wars, he has a problem. He is, unfortunately, in the throes of cancer, and he might not make it to December 18th. He put a message out on Twitter saying, I'm sick. I'm not going to make it to December 18th. Disney, Star Wars, is there some way that I could see this movie before? It's my final wish, and it was granted this week. Disney did allow him to see Force Awakens way before anybody else.
Now, what we got was a video from this gentleman. He was in Spring, Texas, and he had sent it out with his wife, and he was wearing a Star Wars t-shirt. And he was emotionally talking about how much Star Wars has meant to him. And, you know, think about a person who, knowing that you're going to pass away, knowing that your time is short. In fact, the time that he's living right now is time far beyond what the doctor said he could. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I'm trying to live to get to the opening of Star Wars. His thrust right now, you know, for someone it could be to see a child graduate mm-hmm. from college or from high school, or to get to another holiday or a birthday, whatever it is.
Some finish line.
Well, he's there, and he's trying to hold on to see mm-hmm. Star Wars. Well, he put a request out saying, listen, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. And it was truly a passionate request to have Disney or J.J. Abrams to allow him to see, you know, whatever they've completed. He has not been able to see the completed film. The completed film is not finished yet, but he was able to see what they've completed, which was the story with some parts missing, I'm sure.
And there's a precedence for this. There was a fan who wanted to see the Star Trek movie that J.J. Abrams made, and that wish was granted as well. It's such a touching story. It's the big mega corporation does give you the gift of these movies, and to give this gift to this man is amazing.
Well, the Make-A-Wish Foundation has done things like this forever. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say forever. They've done things like this for children. I mean, for such a long time, you can always see something that's a pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. But this right here, you can see, one, what power the stories that we have in our life really mean to us. And then sort of how they become a passion. So anyway, I'm sorry this gentleman's passing. I'm very glad he got to see this. And when the movie comes out, you know, when we're all watching it, maybe we can think about this guy.
There you go. Between now and then, we might want to watch something on TV. We've talked about cord cutting for a while. I'm a cord cutter. I don't necessarily need cable. There's nothing on cable that is for me. Mm-hmm. So those of you who are still on cable, this might be one more step towards your cord cutting. The complete Disney and ESPN Media Networks lineup, all of those Disney channels and all of those ESPN channels are going to be available on the PlayStation View. This is Sony's online digital television service.
Sure, and Apple will have theirs shortly. We have Sling TV also that's available. We were looking at the pricing of this. Yep. There's three tiers of it. Tell me a little bit about those tiers.
Yeah, they start at $50 a month mm-hmm. and then go up from there, $50, $60, and $70, depending on the number of channels that you want. When you get to that $70 level, that's not a discount from the cable.
Not really, because once you throw in high-speed access and then you throw in, you know, whatever bundles they have, many of those bundles can come in, you know, maybe that's a few dollars savings for somebody. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's really that much of a discount.
So we're not talking about discounting here. We're talking about how we're getting this media. And,
sure.
And that's where the transition is, I think. I think we're going to see a change in how, especially younger people, view mm-hmm. this material.
Well, Sling TV, which is Dish Network's version of it, is only available on the device that you purchase it on. So mm-hmm. if you wanted to watch it on two devices, you'd purchase for two subscriptions. Mm-hmm. The View, which is the Sony version through the PlayStation, may be able to be viewed on many different types of devices at the same time. So you could watch it on your home television and on a tablet or on a smartphone mm-hmm. at the same time. That could be a little bit of a difference as far as how the pricing works also.
On a family-based household, you sort of need that.
Sure. And really, the big deal on this is ESPN. ESPN is still one of the real challenges to get streaming only. And typically you have to have a cable subscription. Sling TV has taken some of that away. But, you know, quickly this is going to change. Quickly it's coming. Mm-hmm. And this is another announcement. This is the first one that's standalone through Sony.
Mm-hmm. And I enjoy the transition, but it is certainly a transition. I don't need cable. I don't see any value in that programming, so I don't pay for cable.
But you don't watch sports, and that seems to be the real issue.
That is the big impediment. So this is one more way to get around that impediment for those of you who really love sports and really want to watch sports. Mm-hmm. Those of you who really want to be private, good luck, because everybody wants to know where you are all the time. Internet firms have been banned from offering unbreakable encryption under new laws. This is mostly European, but
this is the European Union.
As we've seen, those European laws do come across the ocean, and we do have to apply them because the internet is global.
So let's talk about this briefly. Apple's service, basically is encrypted. If I was going to FaceTime Steve, that is encrypted. And there's no way Apple will be able to break that encryption to be able to know what Steve and I were scheming to do.
Nor do they want to. They are the pipe. They don't care what you're sending down the pipe.
The Investigatory Powers Bill, which is through the European Union, basically says we can't do that. Apple's got to be able to a way to break that encryption.
Which means there's no encryption.
Well, and that's really the silly part. They said, you know, we're not really interested in what Chip does or what Steve does through his banking online. But if there was something we wanted to get to...
We need to be able to get in.
Well, and that really gets to what you just said. It's either encrypted or it's not encrypted. And what are you going to do? Have tiers of encryption?
But once there's a way to get in, the bad guys are going to find the way to get in.
Exactly.
So that is breaking.
I don't know how it's going to be enforced. I don't know how even companies are going to comply to it. I mean, if you're Apple, what do you do? Just make everything unencrypted? I mean, I don't know how you would do it.
I don't know how you would do it. And the Europeans make up these laws, just like the right to be forgotten law.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, how do you do that?
I don't know. The FCC also just said that Google and Facebook, you can't stop them from tracking you. So that's on the American side. So, you know, we use Google, we use Facebook. Mm-hmm. These are free services. When they're free, you're the product.
And we have to know that. We have to understand that the purpose of those companies is to gain this information.
They are for-profit corporations. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that things that are not for-profit wouldn't have an interest in following you. But what I'm saying is that you are the product. If you go and you're looking up diapers, they're going to send you coupons for diapers. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Targeted advertising, I've said many times before, I enjoy targeted advertising. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see commercials for things I don't want. I want to see commercials for things I do want.
Mm-hmm. When is your private life private and when is it public? That's a real tough place to be.
And we disagree on that topic so much.
We do, but I think you got down to the crux of it when we were talking about Obama and his BlackBerry. And how Secret Service said, we don't want you to have a BlackBerry. And they had to come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a smartphone, and we know it's yours, you can be followed.
That is a GPS-based device that is going to tell the ISP, the phone company, where you are. And from there, who knows who gets that information?
And most of us are not superstars. I mean, we certainly aren't movie stars and things of that nature. I mean, I'm sorry, except for Steve here.
I'm close. I don't know.
But my point is that you can see where this need for to be able to divide things could be. And that's a very tough thing to kind of do, particularly when you have social media available.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we also have looked at, MIT had sent out an article that they basically were quoting a gentleman from the ACLU. And he talked about encryption, that encryption could be a human right, and the ability to kind of create some privacy through these services could be. And he specifically was talking about Apple and their desire to use encryption and your ability to use encryption. And what he was basically saying is those who are using Apple devices tend to be wealthier and tend to be able to afford those types of privacies. And he said, you know, those who are using Google's Android typically don't have that encryption. That stuff is more likely to be able to be followed or tracked or something of that nature. This is well known. In fact, I'll give you a quick one. It says, Google has the best security team of any company in Silicon Valley. And the security people I know at Google are embarrassed by Android. But Apple sells luxury goods, and Google gives away services for free in return for access to data.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, you're kind of going back and forth, that either you're looking for either you're the product, which Android is saying you're the product, or with Apple, you tend to paying a premium for those types of privacies.
And Tim Cook has very famously said very loudly, you are not the product on Apple. You are a consumer who is buying a product, and we are very interested in protecting your privacy.
That is, like I said, that this is... Young people tend to not care, and less educated people on these issues may care or may not care. I mean, we typically get very little traction. By the way, we're spending a lot of time talking about something that many people may not have any interest in.
And that we might not have any impact on.
Sure. But I do think it's important to kind of reason through this. There's not a clear answer to a lot of these things. Because we want to have access at a right price, and it just sometimes...
It's many a trade-off.
Many of us are not going to be able to pay for the ultimate type of package.
It's a trade-off, and it's a debate that we're going to have for a long time, and you and I are very diametrically opposed on these ideas.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something that Google is really helpful with. If maybe you were a group, maybe in Spain, and you were going to have a festival.
We all know about Google Translate. Google Translate is a great tool. It allows you to communicate with people who don't speak the same language as you.
You can write in Latin anytime you want to.
Well, and I don't know who you would communicate with. But Google Translate is a great way to word-for-word translate things. My wife is, of course, itching right now because she can hear me saying these words, and she's a French teacher, and she says, no. French and English are very different languages, and translating from one to the other is not going to get a good result.
Well, as far as sentence structure and things of that nature.
Right. Getting the idea across. But Google Translate is a good way to get a little bit of information across.
Sure.
If you have no way to communicate with someone because you don't speak the same language, at least this is a broken way to get across what you're trying to say.
But what if you were having a festival?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the problem.
And you were going to have a Grella festival, which is a green leafy vegetable.
Green leafy vegetable in Spain. And so the problem is that if you translate some words from one language to another, they might mean something completely different.
Let's just say you wanted to have a clitoris festival.
I don't know what that would entail, but it sounds like fun.
Well, that was what Google Translate did, and they've been advertising this festival, and you can go to it if you would like, and you have to just show up at the G-spot.
That's where the fun is.
Obviously, this was a mistranslation. This is fun. In fact, if you've watched, I'm sure that you've seen pictures over in China.
Yes.
Where they've had the restaurants' names and they've got them all messed up.
Did you see the one that says server translate error? They made a giant sign in front of this restaurant. and in English, it says server translator error because they didn't know what those symbols meant. They changed their symbols into our symbols.
Well,
it's
can't be any different than somebody getting a tattoo and it says water or something like that.
Dumb American. I've always wanted to get a t-shirt that said that. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
And come back next week, we can talk more about all those influential people that we've talked about and more Star Wars. I'm sure there's going to be more Star Wars news.
There'll probably be something that will come out that has Star Wars involved in it.
I'm sure. This is Star Wars season, man. If you need more information, there's lots of great ways to find more information. Go to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104. TMS. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and iTunes. We are on the news every day. News.TooMuchScrolling.com. Find out all the information that you need to survive another day. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.